Welcome to DWB Podcast. We are here talking about the first night of WrestleMania. I can't believe it's here already. So we've listened to, hopefully, all my podcasts proceeding up to this point where we talked about all the shows leading up to WrestleMania. And here we are, the showcase of the Immortals, the biggest show of the year for WWE. And we had 7 matches in night one. So let's talk a little bit about it, and let's figure out what WWE decided to do, and I'll give you my thoughts, my opinions, and things of that nature. If you like the show, please like, subscribe, share the podcast. It really, really helps me. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, pretty much all the podcast catchers you can think of. The show is there. With that being said, let's get a move on and talk about WrestleMania, shall we? So we started off the night with Drew McIntyre taking on Bobby Lashley for the Raw WWE Championship. Lashley is defending. Didn't live up to my expectations, to be honest. I thought this would be a lot more physical. I mean, they definitely tried really, really hard, but it just wasn't the match I was hoping it would be. To be fair, I'm pretty sure there's one point in time where Drew threw Bobby Lashley to the outside, and both seemed to slip on some water, and then kind of were seen walking gingerly in the ring after. So maybe there was a minor enough injury where they did something to where they couldn't work quite to the extent that they wanted to, or something like that. I mean, they still went for a long time, and it was good. It was solid. It just wasn't the best match of the night. And that was my expectation. I really thought that Drew was going to go out there and be the man and steal the show and demonstrate that he is one of the better workers, even though he doesn't, his work rate's not the highest, but like, as far as like delivering entertaining, watchable matches, he's lived up to the hype. I mean, him and Sheamus were amazing. And it just lacked a little bit of the physicality in this matchup. I thought they told a decent story about how Lashley was trying everything he could to avoid the kick of Drew, and Drew was doing everything he could to avoid taking the Hurt Lock. And they did a spot. They did a spot where Lashley has the Hurt Lock on, and Drew starts going to the corner. And it kicks up like Bret Hart used to when he would be in a sleeper. And they went to do that. And that was his reversal. It didn't quite, wasn't pulled off with as much smoothness as Bret Hart used to do it. But, I mean, these guys are much heavier, much bigger than Bret Hart was in his prime. So, whatever. I thought that was a really cool reversal. But Bobby Lashley kicked out and eventually nailed the Hurt Lock and beat McIntyre. In that, he held the Hurt Lock on. Once he finally got it on, Drew never tapped. He passed out. So they kind of protected Drew a little bit. But, I mean, Lashley got the clean victory. But, yeah, it was supposed to kind of be like that was his last-ditch effort. He was in trouble with the Hurt Lock. He tried that when the pin attempt didn't get Bobby Lashley to break the hole, but just Lashley got out of that pinning combination enough to reapply it properly, and then Drew passed out. I liked the finish. I mean, it was the only way you could really have Drew lose in a clean, definitive way without doing too, like, with while protecting him at the same time. I don't think it was necessary. I mean, Drew just was your world champion for practically an entire year. I think he could lose one match to Bobby Lashley. It's going to be okay. And I know he lost to Roman Reigns, but again, Roman Reigns is your SmackDown World Heavyweight Champion. That, I mean, those are not two losses that anybody has to hang their head on. I know WWE tends to try to think about these things. The question is where does Drew go next? I don't know, to be honest. I don't know if maybe he'll move shows. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do with him next. Lashley, obviously, will be the World Heavyweight Champion. I don't really see anybody necessarily ready for him on Raw. You know, I think they would have to rehabilitate a couple different people to get ready for him, like The Fiend. I mean, with the whole storyline with Randy Orton, that would be hard at this point to really pull off. And pretty much everybody else has massive amounts of damage to their character. You know what would be interesting, though? I mean, I know it would be a bummer because he wouldn't win over Lashley, but why not switch? Why not trade Drew McIntyre for Kevin Owens and do a program with Kevin Owens and Bobby Lashley? He's the only person that I think really has a realistic, like, and is healthy enough, built up enough, that is realistically capable of being put in that position. Everybody else is either a heel or isn't credible enough. I mean, with Braun working this whole program with Shane, I think there's been some damage done to him. I don't think he's ready. Yeah, there's just nobody I can think of. We got a backstage segment with Bayley talking to the NWO. This was a lame segment. Eventually, NWO, like, leave her because she's being nerdy. That was the segment, basically. Tag team turmoil. Lana and Naomi started off with Kamel and Billy Kay. Billy Kay and Kamella won. Wow. Just wow. A random tag team thrown together at the last minute beats one of your teams that you've had established for at least a little bit. Okay, but doesn't really speak very highly of Lana and Naomi now, does it? Then Riot Squad beat Kamella and Billy. And then Riot Squad beat Mandy and Dana. Eventually, Riot Squad lost to Tamina and Natalya. So Natalya and Tamina will face Nia and Baszler night two of WrestleMania. There was a lot wrong with these matches. It sucked up a decent amount of time. There was a lot of botches. There was a lot of not smooth wrestling. This was an awful lot of effort to go to get a bunch of girls a payday for being on Mania when none of them really preceding this. In my mind, no story really deserved it. None of the characters are like knocked down, like knocked out of the park, like interesting. This to me was just awful. But hey, whatever. I don't get why they went with Natalya and Tamina. I mean, they're heels. And Nia and Baszler are heels. I thought for sure when Riot Squad beat two straight people that it was obvious that they were basically being rehabilitated. We're going to get at least a shot at Baszler and Nia, if not win. But I guess not. I can only assume that they're giving Tamina and Natalya that shot because they've been around so long. They feel like they deserve it, I guess. That's the only thing I could think of. Because usually WWE does not do that. Like, if this was AEW, I wouldn't even blink twice because they have no problem like pitting heels against heels or faces against faces sometimes if people really want to see the match. But this is very odd for WWE. They don't do this very often. So we'll have to see where we go with that. I definitely think they need to do some work with the women's tag team division. Dana and Mandy just don't work for me. I'm sorry. Lana and Naomi don't work for me. I like the Riot Squad. I don't think Natalya and Tamina is an interesting team at all. I would like to see Natalya team up with somebody, but not Tamina. It's not a good fit. Doesn't really make a lot of sense. And, you know, most likely Nia and Baszler are eventually going to split up, so I don't know. It seems like this title had a reasonable explanation at one point in time. I no longer really see this belt as necessary. I honestly think they should retire it and instead make a women's secondary title like the IC belt instead. That would make way more sense than having a tag team title. Then we had the best match of night one, although, and it was for whatever reason, I don't understand this one iota. This was the match the crowd was the hottest for. The crowd was relatively, I mean, made some noise for Drew and Lashley, but they were kind of quiet. They basically died in the tag team turmoil, except for some spots. But for whatever reason, they were really into this match. I don't understand it. There was no heat going into this matchup. The story didn't matter. And but these two went out there and did well, you know, for what it's worth. I really know a lot of people were thinking that maybe they would go out there and have a really good, strong match, but I wasn't expecting them to maybe possibly have the match at night. They ended up, you know, eventually being surpassed by a match later in the card, but at the time, it was the match I enjoyed the most. So, that's pretty good. Cesaro won, so I think that story is over. They're going to move on. And Cesaro won his first singles match at WrestleMania in his career with WWE. Rollins did the duty, which I'm surprised by. I don't know if maybe Rollins goes back home for a little bit. I don't see where else they could go right now with him as far as like a story. I mean, obviously, they could easily set it up on SmackDown if they really wanted to. I definitely would like to see Cesaro put into a program with somebody and continue this successful building and try to make him a focus and maybe trying to build him up to potentially, you know, a potential competitor for Roman Reigns, assuming he retains the title, which I think he will. But even if he doesn't, Edge is basically leaning heel at this point, so that could be a realistic matchup as well. So I don't think we have a clear idea of where these guys are going, but, you know, I just feel bad that their program wasn't built well enough in a way to really truly fit with just how good of a match they went out there to have. But a lot of people were in that position this year. Then we had Dolph and Rude with an interview backstage talking about how they retained the tag team titles on SmackDown. I think this was just a way to get them on WrestleMania and remind people that they retained their titles. Then we had New Day come out all together. And this was the Raw Tag Team title match. This was one of the weirdest matches I've ever seen or witnessed in my well over 30 years of watching wrestling. New Day, Kofi and Xavier worked the match with AJ in the ring and isolated AJ and cut the ring off in half, keeping AJ from tagging in almost, which psychology wise on its face sounds like it works, because why would you want to let the guy tag in like a 7 foot tall monster? I get it. But they worked a heel way of working. They did all the standard spots of building up for the baby face's eventual hot tag. I mean, this was a classic tag team design match, except that it was all inverted. Instead of the heels working the heat, eventually leading up to the babyface hot tag, the babyfaces were working the heat, setting up for the hot tag for the heel. It was weird. I don't understand it. It was flabbergasting. I can't believe they went out there and did this. Here's my only rationalization that I could possibly think of to explain this. Because clearly, New Day are not, you know, idiots. And AJ's a longtime veteran. Clearly they know this is not proper psychology. The only reason I could see them setting the match up like this is so that when almost got tagged into the matchup, the crowd popped. But they weren't popping because of almost, right? They were popping because we are so ingrained with, you know, the setup for the hot tag. I think people just out of habit just cheered, right? But WWE position as look how excited people were that almost was going to get in the ring and do some wrestling. You know, see what I'm saying? Like if you watch the context of the match, they cheered simply because they're used to cheering at that spot because the New Day worked the heat, and AJ made, like, the hot tag. Normally, we cheer in this situation, and even though, like, those are the heels, and the fans should be smart enough to not do that, you know, just because the pattern's so familiar, I think they just did it. And Vince is like, great, they did exactly what we wanted them to. And they'll edit it later on Raw, like when AJ and Almost are talking about how they won the tag titles, and paint it as if the crowd really was that excited to see Almost wrestle. That's the only explanation, because otherwise it just doesn't make any sense. If that's the case, it's still really lame. And I hated this matchup with the fiery passion of a thousand suns, because when it gets every old school rule in the book, I mean, your babyfaces do not work the heat setting up a hot tag for the heels. That's just not done. I don't care. Like, but whatever. Like, I was just flabbergasted by this. I was, like, just taken aback. I like I said, I've never seen anything like it in my entire life. Then we had Braun taking on Shane in the steel cage match. Elias and Jackson attack Braun with steel chairs to soften him up for Shane. Shane beats Braun with the chair for a really long time, just when you think he's going to maybe get one over on Braun. Braun has a comeback. Eventually, you know, he's beating Shane down. Somehow Shane gets control of the match. This match was just weird how much offense Shane got on this. Eventually, Shane got control of the matchup, almost wins the matchup. He's climbing down the cage. Braun stands up after getting a toolbox shoved into his head, which should theoretically knock him out, somehow miraculously recovers to get up, grab Shane's hand as he's crawling down the cage, pull his arm through the cage enough to kind of, quote-unquote, hold him there, and then he basically ripped the steel cage away from its holding, so he kind of ripped the cage fencing in. So there's like a hole in the cage is the way I want you to picture this. He punches like a hole in a cage, and then he kind of rips it in, bringing Shane back into the ring that way. And then he threw him up on the top, and then there was this weird, long, awkward pause as like Shane and Braun are up there trying to steady themselves to do this spot, which is not realistic in any shape for, but hey, like when you're that high up, whatever. And basically Braun, quote unquote, throws him off the cage, which is really what it was. It's like Shane just threw himself off, and I can't believe he took that bump. I cannot believe he basically essentially did a splash into the ring onto the mat, which, like, I know WWE doesn't make the ring as stiff as it was back in the 90s. This bump just hurts my soul just looking at it. Especially like when you remember that Shane's not a wrestler. He doesn't have the muscle definition a wrestler would have. His neck muscles aren't built up like a wrestler would. His back muscles aren't built up like a wrestler would. Like, he basically just flipped over and landed on his back. It was a hell of a spot. Braun gets down and picks him up and does the running power slam. 1, 2, 3. Game over. Like, for me, like, the massive problem with this matchup is that Shane got too much offense in. Braun should have just went out there and destroyed him, make a mistake, set up Shane to take a ridiculous bump, and call it a day, like, and then go home. But, like, instead they tried to have, like, a serious match, which is weird. I don't know. It was an odd choice. But we got the ridiculous spot. I do feel bad for Shane because I think they were expecting a holy shit chant. They did not get like a loud one. It seemed like there was a segment of the crowd that chanted it, but then there was a more higher majority that just didn't care. The crowd like was like this for most of the night. I was thinking that they were going to be a hot crowd, and they were not. I don't know, maybe it was the rain delay that took some energy out of them. I don't know what it was, but they never really found their voice in this match and in the whole night. And I was kind of surprised by that because I thought the crowd would be ready to rock and roll and pretty much want to cheer basically anything. But we were proven wrong about that. The crowd was not particularly hot. So then Bayley appears ringside to throw to the Hall of Fame of 2020. Everybody comes out and gets their accolades. Then we go to Bad Bunny, Damian Priest taking on Miz and Morrison. You know, this for whatever reason, the crowd liked this. I don't understand. I mean, they weren't like super like reactionary, but they did react a little bit more than they have to other matches. I mean, for crying out loud, Bad Bunny hit the Canadian Destroyer. For all those people who are super impressed by that, like, it's not that impressive, okay? Mostly John Morrison is making that move happen, okay? Just to peel back the curtain just a little bit. All right, that's mostly a John Morrison thing. But, I mean, you got to be pretty athletic to make the other half of the thing happen. And so Bad Bunny was able to pull that off. He pulled off a couple nice things in his matchup. It was the most I think they've ever got out of a famous person in a match by far. I mean, this was much better of a performance than Lawrence Taylor, but that's not saying much. I mean, for that alone, it was awesome, you know. And all it was basically a standard tag match. And you know what? That's okay. I mean, I know a lot of people like want to see like the newfangled stuff. But sometimes there's just a place for like that old school vibe, and like Morrison and Miz kind of at first got their comeuppance because they were undervaluing Bad Bunny and not taking him seriously, and they regretted that. Bad Bunny, you know, proved himself that he was like, you know, here to be real. Like he was further along than they thought, you know, storyline wise. And then they got mad and shut it down and beat the crap out of Bad Bunny, setting up for the inevitable hot tag of Damian Priest. And then we're on our way home. Bad Bunny and Damian Priest eventually win. You know, I like this matchup. The crowd reacted to it more than they reacted to a lot of the other matches. So, in some way, that's pretty complimentary. Then it was time for the main event. I honestly thought that was the main event. But then we went to the main event, which was the WWE Women's SmackDown Championship match. If you notice, Drew Lashley was Raw, Kofi and AJ was Raw, Braun and Shane Raw, Bad Bunny, Damian Priest, Miz, and Morrison was Raw. There's only two matches tonight that was technically all SmackDown, which was Rollins and Cesaro in this match. This was more of a Raw heavy half of the WrestleMania. So tomorrow night will be more SmackDown heavy. The tag team turmoil match featured teams from both shows. So that was kind of a mixture. I thought that was interesting. You know, I didn't really notice that like when I was like talking about it. I don't know, my brain just didn't process it. But then as the show went on, I kind of noticed it. And if you notice, Samoa Joe, Michael Cole, and Byron Saxton were on commentary all night. They didn't switch between the two commentary teams. So I would guess Corey Graves will be on commentary tomorrow with that other guy that's on SmackDown. And they'll just do the whole show. That way both teams get like their fair share. I'll give them this. The video preceding this matchup made this feud seem a lot less crappier. And in reality, they didn't feature any of the ridiculous Reginald stuff. They didn't include any of the Nia Baszler stuff. They made it seem like they were just involved in a personal feud the whole time. It was awesome gaslighting. And we got the match that we've been waiting to see. These two came out. And I was blown away by this. I don't think I've ever seen this as long as I've been watching wrestling in my entire life. Before the match starts, like when they really know that the match is going to happen, Belair just starts crying and gets choked up. Now, I've seen Shawn Michaels crying when he won the world title. I've seen a couple other people cry when they won the world title, but I've never seen anybody cry because they realized they're main eventing their first WrestleMania, you know, and they're doing so for a big title. Like that was a moment. And then I was kind of like, oh, please, like, pull yourself together. Because, like, I mean, while it was cool, like, you're there to do a job. So, like, there is, like, kind of, like, an element of professionalism. Like, I was kind of worried that maybe, like, just the moment was so big for her that she was going to be so emotional that she wasn't going to be able to get herself back. But she did, man. They went out there and tore the house down. I thought it was the best match of the night. And, considering they're the main event, that's kind of what you'd like to have. You'd like to have the best match of the night be the main event. These two girls went out there and proved that they deserve this spot. I really liked the story. I liked everything about it. And it was just everything that the feud wasn't. It was serious, straightforward. Just let's go out there and see who the best athlete is. And, of course, we got the winner, which was Belair, is your new SmackDown Women's Champion. It was a hell of a match, man. It was a hell of a moment. So, I misguessed the Raw Heavyweight Championship match. I said Drew would retain. He did not. I didn't think WWE would do that. I did not get the Tag Team Turmoil right. I said Riot Squad would win. I was almost right. I did get Cesaro right. I did get AJ almost right. Did get Braun, Bad Bunny, and Priest right. And I got Belair right. So, I only missed two. That's not bad. Not bad on my predictions. As far as, like, a show is concerned, it was good. Like, if this was any other pay-per-view, I would have really enjoyed this. But it's WrestleMania, man. I want it so badly for Drew and Lashley to just tear the house down. And if they would have done that and maybe one other match been really, really good, this would have felt like WrestleMania worthy. But, you know, it's tough to analyze it that way because really, we got to really view it as a whole. Because any other WrestleMania, there would be at least, you know, 12 to 14 matches. Sometimes more, and really we can't know, and we really can't grade WrestleMania just yet. I would say the only thing that really didn't feel, like, match quality-wise, like it belonged on the show, was the Tag Team Turmoil. Everything else, despite, like, how crappy the stories were, did kind of feel WrestleMania-worthy. If you forgot about TV, if you just based it purely on, like, the work rate and stuff like that. I will say this. It was a little disappointing that the crowd, I don't know if maybe it's because it's an open air stadium or whatever. The crowd just didn't seem with it. Just did not seem like they were really in. They reacted to a lot of stuff, but they were never like really super hot for anything but Cesaro and Rollins. They got a little hot for, which is weird. I mean, they definitely were into the main event, but not like they were for Cesaro and Rollins. That was just my take on it. So far, thumbs up. Three matches out of seven being really, really good. One of them being great. That's not bad. And one of them being a solid spectacle match, which is Bad Bunny versus Miz and Morrison and all that. Like, that was, like, for a spot that was featuring a celebrity, that was better than it had any right being. So I can't wait for next night, and then we'll really hit hard with what I think WrestleMania comes out in the wash yet, but I don't think it's fair to judge it just one night. So far, so good. Theoretically, I would guess we're going to get seven matches tomorrow night. Just a guess, which would give us a total of 14 over the two nights. If they do another three matches that are good, then this is going to end up being like an above average WrestleMania. If they could have maybe two really good matches and one awesome match, then I think that that would pick this WrestleMania up and put it in a different, more on a level of WrestleMania. So we'll see. Till tomorrow night. Remember, you're listening to DWB Podcast. I am your host, Joey Reckless. See you tomorrow.